888-321-0815. Joining us live on the line, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm great, Mark. How are you?
Great. Any second thoughts on not going to the Netanyahu speech today?
No. What has disturbed me very much is the degree to which Speaker Boehner has politicized the issue. Netanyahu has every right in the world to raise the issues that he wants to raise, but it is wrong for Boehner to have invited Netanyahu without even consulting the President of the United States, who is our leader, whether he's a Democrat, Republican, or whatever he may be, is our leader on foreign policy. That politicizes foreign policy in a way that I think is unhealthy, and in the long term does not do us well. And the second area is that concerns me, as everybody knows, there's an election in Israel in a couple of weeks, and I don't want to see the floor of the United States Congress being used as a prop or a photo opportunity for somebody who's running for re-election. Netanyahu's party may win, they may not win, but Congress should not be used as part of his re-election campaign.
What are you trying to demonstrate by not going?
Well, that I think that Boehner has set a very bad precedent in politicizing foreign policy.
What do you think his motivation is?
Well, he has his views, and he's more than entitled to his views on Iran and how we go forward in preventing Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. That's number one. And number two, I think, frankly, he is in the middle of a political campaign, and coming to address a joint session of Congress helps your re-election efforts. So I think that's one of his motives. But in terms of the issue of Iran, you have a very, very, very difficult issue of which nobody, I think, has any magic solutions. There is widespread agreement between the president and myself and Republicans and Netanyahu that Iran should not get and will not get a nuclear weapon. Where the difference of opinion lies is how you prevent that. Right now, the administration is working with the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Russia, China, to work out an agreement with Iran to prevent them from getting a nuclear weapon. Netanyahu feels that this agreement, or the process at least, has not gone, is not as effective as it should be. That's his view. What the president has said is, look, if we cannot get an agreement, which is very, very tough, in Iran, you have a hardline group of people, section of their government, that hates America, doesn't want any agreement, hates Israel, etc. And what the president has said is, you know what, we may not have an agreement, but we're going to try to do everything we can to reach an agreement. And I support that effort. And I will tell you something, Mark, that disturbs me very much. I think, you know, people forget about the cost of war and what war has done to this country and to the world. I voted against going into the war in Iraq, and I think history will record that as the right vote. But it bothers me very much that you have some members of Congress who apparently don't have, you know, any problem about maybe going to war in Iran. Well, you know, I think a war in Afghanistan, which has gone on forever, a war in Iraq, and another war is not exactly in the best interest of the United States. So I think I agree with the president that we do everything that we can to try to achieve the goal, which is making sure that Iran does not have a nuclear weapon, but you do it without going to war.
Because the other option, I mean, going to war with Iran, I mean, will that actually stop a nuclear program? I mean, can you bomb a country that big enough to stop a nuclear program?
That is one of the arguments. But the second argument, you know, Mark, it is so easy for politicians to beat their chest and say, we're going to get tough, we're going to go to war. Man, I've heard that so many times. If you go to war against Iraq, who do you think is the dominant force in Iraq right now? The dominant force in Lebanon. It is Iran. And they could wage asymmetrical attacks against the United States and our allies all over the world. This is not some small little country. So I just get a little bit of tired of people who haven't learned the lesson of Iraq. Iraq and Afghanistan, we're going to go into Afghanistan, we'll be out in a few months, no problem. Well, that was 13 years later. And we're going to go into Iraq, no problem. And that was, you know, 12 years later. And you got 6,700 Americans, men and women, brave people, put their lives online, died for this country. 500,000 came back with various types of wounds. $3 to $6 trillion in expenditures for those wars. So to my mind, if we can achieve our goal without going to war, yeah, that's my position.
So you don't blame Netanyahu as much as Boehner, it sounds like.
Well, Netanyahu is not a fool, and he understands what's going on. I think the real source of blame is with Boehner, who is politicizing the issue. You know, and then it's, you know, make statements that, you know, well, apparently Obama really doesn't care about Israel and all that stuff. That's just 100% political. But, you know, Netanyahu is not a fool. And in talking to Boehner, he could have, you know, gotten on the phone and said, well, you know, how does the president feel about this? Or maybe I'll call up the president. But the president has been clear, and I think he makes a good point, is that 2 weeks before an election, whether the election is in Germany or France or the U.K., you don't invite the leader of the country who's up for re-election to have that used as a prop for your re-election campaign.
I'm talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. The funding of Homeland Security has been up in the air again. They'll be voting again later this week. What do you make of this whole controversy?
I can't, you know, I hesitate to call it a controversy. I think it's just, you know, Mark, just totally absurd. Here we are, you know, we talk about security issues. You got this ISIS group, which has, you know, committed atrocities that are unspeakable, that have attacked in Paris, they've attacked in Denmark, and they are a threat. And you have Homeland Security, whose job is, among other things, to protect our borders, and you have my Republican colleagues in the House. And by the way, people should understand that in the Senate, if my memory is correct, by a 98-2 vote, virtually unanimous, Democrats, Republicans, independents said, you know what, let's fund what we call a clean Homeland Security bill. That means a bill without any riders or poison pills. Just fund the damn agency. Do it. And then in the House, they're saying, well, you know, we have a problem with President Obama's executive order on immigration. Well, fine. We can debate immigration. And I would point out to you that Congress, the Senate, passed a comprehensive immigration bill, which the House did not take up. So what they are saying is, well, unless Obama withdraws his immigration proposal, we're not going to fund long-term Homeland Security. I think that's, frankly, pretty crazy. And that's some of the Tea Party folks in the House, and Boehner has to figure out a way to deal with that. But we did get a 98-2 vote here, which is the right thing to do, is to fund Homeland Security, and we can debate immigration whenever, as soon as possible.
Let's go to the phone. We go to South Burlington. Ben, good morning.
Yes, Senator Sanders. I think it's hypocritical that you have apparently thought about voting for the F-35. I live near the airport, and it's kind of a noise. First of all, the overspending on it that could be spend on education and other needs, and it's real loud. It's going to hurt our ears. It's going to make us more of a terrorist target. And most importantly, I think you could single-handedly stop this, but most importantly, it's not the F-35 coalition, and I think probably the Guard says that it will not, even if the F-35s do not come here, it won't cost any jobs. So
you know, this is an issue, as you know, in the caller knows, something we've talked about a whole lot. This is not a question of support or not support for the F-35. The F-35 is built. It is the plane, the fighter plane of the United States Air Force and of NATO and of other countries around the world. Have there been cost overruns? Absolutely. But the issue is you have the F-35, and the issue for me, and I think for our delegation and for the Vermont National Guard, is where does the plane go? Does it go to South Carolina? Does it go to Florida? Does it go to Vermont? So it's not a question whether you're for it or you're not for it. It is here. The question is where it is located. I would disagree with the caller in the sense that if, and this is what the National Guard tells me, and I think they are right, if the Vermont National Guard, the Air National Guard, does not have the state-of-the-art plane. It is likely, although not definitively, we don't know, not going to say absolutely definitively, that without that mission of flying the state-of-the-art plane, there will, in fact, be job losses at the Air National Guard. So to me, the question was not whether you like the plane or don't like the plane. The plane has been being built for decades, actually. It is where it is located. I'd rather have it in Vermont than in South Carolina or Florida.
Talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Can we talk about you for a moment?
Me?
Yes.
Yes, we can talk about me. We can talk about you. We can talk about anything you want to talk about.
Well, let's talk about me after we talk about you.
All right.
I've been fascinated reading these stories that have been following you across the country as you explore this idea of running for president. Stories that focus on things like speeding tickets and bloody noses. I guess let's start first with, do you just sort of remark at the shallowness of some of these stories?
Well, Mark, you're raising, as you know, you've known me for a few years.
Uh-huh.
And you're touching an issue that is very sensitive to me, and that is media coverage of what's going on. This country today faces a series of problems, whether it is the collapse of the American middle class, growing income and wealth inequality, the fact that we're the only major country on earth without a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people, climate change, you name the issue. We have a lot of issues out there. And it does astound me, the shallowness of media coverage and the degree to which media coverage focuses on individuals and personalities rather than on the views of people, not just candidates, facing our country. And I think it's probably just a lot easier to focus on personality so that if I walk down the street and I slipped on a banana peel, that could be a great story. But it's a little bit more difficult to write my views on the Trans-Pacific Partnership because you have to know something about trade or you have to know something about economics to talk about, you know, how do we create the millions of jobs that we need. So it does, I think, the end result of that, Mark, is that it was a poll that came out last year. And the polls said, if you can believe this, and there were two polls, similar results, something like 63% of the American people a year ago could not name which political party controlled the U.S. House, which was then the Republicans, which controlled the U.S. Senate, which was the Democrats. They didn't know. So what we do is, if you watch CNN every day and all this stuff, it's always about crisis and killing and sensationalism, and it is not a serious discussion. I'll give you one example on that, which is just, to me, mind-blowing. I think this week or next week, they will come to the floor of the Senate, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement.
Yep.
This happens to be the largest trade agreement in the history of the United States of America. It will impact thousands of people in Vermont and all over this country. To the best of my knowledge, do you know how much time this trade agreement has been given on the major television networks?
Like pretty much zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
It has given zero. And, you know, if you look around Vermont, we have lost many manufacturing plants, a significant number. We've lost thousands of decent-paying jobs, I think, to some degree attributable to trade. People can disagree with me. That's not my point here. My point is, how is it that we don't discuss this issue? I'm the ranking member of the Budget Committee. And right now, we're involved in a huge struggle. We have some folks, generally right-wing Republicans, who would like to cut Social Security, convert Medicare into a voucher program, massive cuts in Medicaid, and give large tax breaks to the wealthy and large corporations. How much discussion have you seen in the major media on that?
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot. I'm going to be doing an event, I think, on Thursday. I think it's on Thursday, with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicaid. They're going to present me and some other senators with 2 million signatures from seniors all over the country saying, don't cut Social Security. I doubt that it'll get any attention. Also, to answer your question, it is a real danger to democracy. Look, we in our state, throughout the country, people have differences of opinion. That's called democracy. That's great. That's good. We all learn from each other. But not to discuss the most serious issues frightens me very much.
You know, the headline on the Boston Globe story yesterday, a less crusty Sanders tests presidential waters. turning you,
well,
they
the real story was, you know, I was in Iowa, and we spoke to some pretty large crowds. And, you know, I know sometimes I bore people, I go on for too long. But I do think it's important when I speak to people to talk about issues. Why is the middle class declining despite a huge increase in productivity and technology? Are we comfortable as a nation when the top 0.1% owns more wealth than the bottom 90%? When 99% of all new income is going to the top 1% today? Now, people could disagree with me. Maybe somebody will call you up in 2 minutes and say, call up and say, Bernie, you're wrong. Fine. But I think these are the kinds of issues that need to be discussed.
Well, you know, another interesting thing, as you mentioned, I have covered here for a while. You've been talking about income inequality for, I would say, about 30 years that I'm aware of. 30 years that I'm aware of. I mean, it's not like, you know, and what's interesting is, like, a number of issues that you've talked about in the past, this one now seems to really be rising up there.
Well, thank you. And you're right. You know, I have talked about it for a long, long time. And I'll tell you why, if I can briefly, why it is today such a huge, huge issue, which has everything to do with the quality of life that your kids, my kids, are going to have. And that is that, number one, it really speaks to what kind of country we want to be and whether we are content with having young people unable to afford to go to college or leaving college deeply in debt, or the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world, at the same time when we're seeing a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires. That is the very fundamental issue. Are we content? And the second issue is an economic issue, in the sense that if you got tens of millions of working people in this country who have virtually no disposable income because they're working for $8, $9, $10 an hour, you cannot create a strong economy and create the jobs that we want unless people are having the money to spend, to go out to a restaurant, to buy a TV, to buy a washing machine. If they don't have that money, you're not going to create the jobs, and obviously we have to create jobs in this country. And the third issue, Mark, which may be the most important of all, is that as a result of this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, the billionaires of this country, like the Koch brothers, are able to spend as much money as they want on the political process. And frankly, I don't know how you retain your democratic foundations when right-wing billionaires or anybody can spend so much money on an election. So those are my concerns.
Let's go to Williston. Sam, good morning.
Yeah, good afternoon, or good morning, Senator. What about doing a buyout for Social Security? Let's say I just want a buyout. I go in, well, I've invested in Social Security. Give me a buyout. Give me 10% of my money. And I'm out of the system.
Okay. What do you mean you're not in the system?
Well, I guess Sam is suggesting that he wants to get out of the system.
So I do a buyout. The government pays me off. I take 10%. It caught me because I started laughing because you started mentioning the Koch brothers. You keep waxing that mole a lot. I mean, what about Mrs. Clinton with her money coming in? Mm-hmm. The money she's pulling into this campaign from people we don't even know.
Let me answer you two questions. It is not my view that it is only the Koch brothers. That's not my view. Right? There are other extraordinarily wealthy people who are supporting Democrats as well. But I think it is, there really is not quite an equivalence here. It is, the Koch brothers are in a world of their own. And while there are, you know, billionaires who put money into Democratic campaigns, absolutely true. And I'm not happy about any of that. I happen to believe that we should move to public funding of elections. And no billionaire should be able to buy elections regardless of his or her political views. Koch brothers are in a world of their own. They are worth $100 billion. They are the second wealthiest family in the country behind the Waltons. And they have pledged already. And what they say is they're going to spend some $800 or $900 million, and may well be they can spend double that. They have an endless supply of money. In terms of Social Security, Sam, let me tell you, I don't agree with your view. Social Security is not an investment program. It is an insurance program. And by an insurance program, what I mean, it's the same our concept is auto insurance or fire insurance. You have it because someday you may need it. And in this country right now, as a result of Social Security, we have gone a long way to lowering the level of poverty for senior citizens. Before Social Security, it was about 50%. Today, it's too high, but it is about 9%. And I believe in the Social Security system. And I do not think that it should be privatized. I understand the argument that if people put their money on Wall Street, which is doing very, very well today, you can get a better return than you can in Social Security. That is true. On the other hand, if you had your money in Wall Street 8 years ago when it crashed, and you were a senior citizen, I'm not quite sure how you would be doing today. You would have lost perhaps your life savings. So the function of Social Security is a pretty simple one. It is to say to every eligible senior in this country that when you reach retirement age, you are going to have at least a modest standard of living. There will be a check. And by the way, throughout the history of Social Security, and this is its strength, whether it's recession or economic strong times, every benefit owed to every eligible American for the last 70-plus years has been paid. No one has ever gotten a letter saying, sorry, your Social Security check has been cut in half. That's a pretty good record. And that kind of security means an enormous amount to the American people, and I will do my best to not only maintain Social Security, I think we need to expand benefits for lower-income seniors.
We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. One of the things you said, Bernie, a few months ago is that you wanted to get a sense of out there in places like Iowa and the rest of the country if there was this, really the groundswell, whether or not there was really right. The enthusiasm. And what are you feeling at this point?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm feeling. You know, Mark, and I don't, it's hard. This is the first time I've, ever campaigned in a sense or gone outside of Vermont. So it's a little into unfamiliar territory. But I have been to Iowa on a number of occasions, just was there last week. And the turnouts are pretty good. The turnouts are pretty good, and obviously people coming out are strongly supportive. My sense is that, and I got to tell you, the people of Iowa are very similar to the people in Vermont. It's a very down-to-earth people, very sensible. And I think there is a real worry about the future for our kids, and not happy about the degree to which money, is influencing the political process and so forth. So I think there is a level of support. But, what I am trying to gauge, and it is not easy, is to determine the level of support that there is throughout the country, and also the kind of political infrastructure that we can put together. In Vermont, when you run for office, and I've done this, you can get volunteers, you can pay people, and we put, our money into grassroots effort. We hire a lot of young people who knock on doors, and that's the way I like to do it. You can do that in Vermont. How many tens and tens and tens of thousands of people would you need that to do that nationally? Hundreds of thousands. How do you put together that infrastructure? And then the money question is, my average campaign contribution, I believe, in my last election was $45. $45, the Koch brothers are going to spend $800 or $900 million. Can you raise the money to run a good campaign? And here's what my concern is of all of that, Mark. It's not just my ego. It is, if I'm going to carry a progressive banner, and that means rebuild America, create millions of jobs, deal with climate change, deal with income and wealth inequality, all the issues that I talk about, I have to do it well, not just for my ego, but for the millions of people who believe in those views. It has to be a good campaign, a strong campaign, a campaign that can win. And that's what I'm assessing right now. So that's kind of where we are. The answer to your question, I think there is a lot of support, but we now have to take a look at the kind of political infrastructure we can put together and whether we can raise the kind of money that we need.
How do you gauge support outside of a place like Iowa where you go?
That is, well, look, it's, I wish I could tell you I had a metric, some kind of magical formula. I get around the country a little bit. You see the people who come out. You see to what degree they reflect other people and what they are saying about other people feel. But at the end of the day, it's going to have to be a gut feeling, and there's no magical technological tool that I can use. It's going to be in my gut. Is there the support? Look, You know me, and I think the people of Vermont know me. I have my voice, and the work that I have done has taken on the most powerful people and institutions in this country, and that is, you know, we take them all. We've taken on Wall Street and taken on the drug companies and taken on the insurance companies and taken on the military-industrial complex and you name it. And those are very powerful people, and they don't, you know, they respond in kind. So before I do this, I just have to be prepared to know that we can run a strong and hopefully winning campaign.
One of the things I also know about you is that you don't waste your time. You wouldn't be going out to Iowa five times.
That's right. No, I don't waste my time. And, you know, this is, look, it's a, you know, you can talk to my wife. You know, this is something that I am wrestling with. I'll tell you, you know, and here's the dynamic. Here's the dilemma. It is not that I wake up every morning saying, gee, I'd love to be president of the United States. I love Vermont, and I'm so proud to be, one of the Vermont senators. But it is my real fear, somebody who has seven grandchildren. I worry very much about the future of this country, and I worry about the impact that, you know, these incredibly greedy people on top, whether it's Wall Street or wherever it is, their concern is to make another buck tomorrow, and they don't care how they do it. And there is no rational economic reason. I mean, and by the way, you know, one of my heroes in this world is Pope Francis, who has been raising, you know, in a very profound way, the role that money is playing, not only in the United States, of course, but all over the world. And, you know, why is it that the middle class continues to shrink despite all of the global economy and all of the technology and all of the increase in productivity? Why is that? Why? And it has to do with the fact, I think, of incredible greed of the top one-tenth of 1% who want it all. They really want it all. And what I don't want to go on and on and on. But this is what I worry about. And somebody has got to stand up to that. We need candidates to stand up to that. Certainly not just me. We need candidates all over this country to stand up to that. But if you have a campaign where the important issues are not being raised, where working families, people listening to this program right now, Mark, don't know how they're going to put food on the table tomorrow. You got husbands and wives in Vermont both working and barely making enough money to pay the bills. Why is that? Who's going to stand up and fight for them? Who's going to take on the billionaire class who want more tax breaks for the rich and cuts and all the programs that working families need? So that's my dilemma.
Boy,
I think we need that voice, but I just have to wrestle with the fact whether, you know, we can put it together.
It doesn't sound to me like you're wrestling very much.
Well, I am, because if you do something, Mark, you have to, and again, it's not me. If you do it, it has to be done well, because if it's not done well, then people say, oh, you see, Bernie Sanders, you know, he's just a loudmouth. No one really supports what he believes. That's what I don't want to happen.
A loudmouth with a bloody nose, too. And a little less crusty, though. A little less crusty.
There you go.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
Senator Bernie Sanders joining us live on the line this morning from our nation's capital. Huh. All right. A moment of your time for our friends at the Vermont Coffee Company. It is coffee roasted for friends. We very much want to encourage you to use this product. You know, why not use the product as a excuse for you to pick up the phone, call up one of your friends and say, you know, I just heard Bernie Sanders on Mark Johnson's show. Let's talk about him today and invite him on over. You know, I mean, it all is about interacting with other human beings on the planet here, right? Isn't that what it's all about? So head to your favorite local independent grocery store, your favorite local co-op, and you can always purchase the product online, too. They have a nice dark roast. There's also a fabulous mild roast. And for those of you living in the decaffeinated world, a really robust coffee for you, too. That's Vermont Coffee Company Coffee. It is coffee roasted for friends. If you ever want to order it online, it's easy to do. Go to VermontCoffeeCompany.com. Couple of clicks and your credit card number and the product will be on its way to your friends and relatives. One of the cool things about when it's delivered, the UPS man will tell you what it is even before it arrives. It's flavorful. That's going to wrap things up for today. Have a great town meeting day. Come back and join us same time, same place. Tomorrow we'll be breaking down some of the results. And join us tonight as well, too, for our results. FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. News is next.